Chapter 3. The Amerlin's Anger. Egwene floated in blackness. She was without form, lacking shape or body. The thoughts, imaginings, worries, hopes, and ideas of all the world extended into eternity around her. This was the place between dreams and the waking world, a blackness pinpricked with thousands upon thousands of distinct lights, each more focused and intense than the stars of the skies. They were dreams, and she could look in on them, but did not. The ones she wanted to see were warded, and most of the others were mysteries to her. There was one dream she longed to slip into. She restrained herself. Though her feelings for Gawain were still strong, her opinion of him was muddled recently. Getting lost in his dreams would not help. She turned about, looking through the expanse. Recently she'd started coming here to float and think. The dreams of all the people here, some from her world, some from shadows of it, reminded her why she fought. She must never forget that there was an entire world outside the White Tower's walls. The purpose of Aes Sedai was to serve that world. Time passed as she lay bathed in the light of dreams. Eventually she willed herself to move and located a dream she recognized, though she wasn't certain how she did it. The dream swept up toward her, filling her vision. She pressed her will against the dream and sent a thought into it. Nynaeve, it is time to stop avoiding me. There is work to be done, and I have news for you. Meet me in 2 nights in the hall of the tower. If you do not come, I will be forced to take measures. Your dalliance threatens us all. The dream seemed to shudder, and Egwene pulled back as it vanished. She'd already spoken to Elaine. Those two were loose threads. They needed to be truly raised to the shawl, with the oaths administered. Beyond that, Egwene needed information from Nynaeve. Hopefully the threat, mixed with a promise of news, would bring her. And that news was important. The White Tower finally unified, the Amerlin seat secure, Elaida captured by the Seanchan. Pinprick dreams streaked around Egwene. She considered trying to contact the Wise Ones, but decided against it. How should she deal with them? The first thing was to keep them from thinking they were being dealt with. Her plan for them was not yet firm. She let herself slip back into her body, content to spend the rest of the night with her own dreams. Here she couldn't keep thoughts of Gawain from visiting her, nor did she want to. She stepped into her dream and into his embrace. They stood in a small, stone-walled room shaped like her study in the tower, yet decorated like the common room of her father's inn. Gawain was dressed in sturdy Two Rivers woolens and did not wear his sword. A more simple life. It could not be hers, but she could dream. Everything shook. The room of past and present seemed to shatter, shredding into swirling smoke. Egwene stepped back, gasping, as Gawain ripped apart as if made of sand. All was dust around her, and 13 black towers rose in the distance beneath a tar-like sky. One fell, and then another, crashing to the ground. As they did, the ones that remained grew taller and taller. The ground shook as several more towers fell. Another tower shook and cracked, collapsing most of the way to the ground, but then it recovered and grew tallest of all. At the end of the quake, 6 towers remained, looming above her. Egwene had fallen to the ground, which had become soft earth, covered in withered leaves. The vision changed. She was looking down at a nest. In it, a group of fledgling eagles screeched toward the sky for their mother. One of the eaglets uncoiled, and it wasn't an eagle at all, but a serpent. It began to strike at the fledglings one at a time, swallowing them whole. The eaglets simply continued to stare into the sky, pretending that the serpent was their sibling as it devoured them. The vision changed. She saw an enormous sphere made of the finest crystal, It sparkled in the light of 23 enormous stars, shining down on where it sat on a dark hilltop. There were cracks in it, and it was being held together by ropes. There was Rand, walking up the hillside, holding a woodsman's axe. He reached the top and hefted the axe, then swung at the ropes one at a time, chopping them free. The last one parted, and the sphere began to break apart, the beautiful globe falling in pieces. Rand shook his head. Egwene gasped, came awake, and sat upright. She was in her rooms in the White Tower. The bedchamber was nearly empty. She'd had Elida's things removed, but hadn't completely furnished it again. She had only a washstand, a rug of thick woven brown fibers, and a bed with posts and drapes. The window shutters were closed. Morning sunlight peeked through. She breathed in and out. Rarely did dreams unsettle her as much as this one had. Calming herself, she reached down to the side of her bed, picking up the leather-bound book she kept there to record her dreams. The middle of the three this night was the clearest to her. She felt the meaning of it, interpreting it as she sometimes could. The serpent was one of the Forsaken, hidden in the White Tower, pretending to be Aes Sedai. Egwene had suspected this was the case. Varin had said she believed it so. Mesaana was still in the White Tower. But how did she imitate an Aes Sedai? Every sister had re-sworn the oaths. Apparently, Mesaana could defeat the oath rod. As Egwene carefully recorded the dreams, she thought about the towers, looming, threatening to destroy her, and she knew some of the meaning there, too. If Egwene did not find Mesaana and stop her, something terrible would happen. It could mean the fall of the White Tower, perhaps the victory of the Dark One. Dreams were not foretellings. They didn't show what would happen, but what could. Light, she thought, finishing her record. As if I didn't have enough to worry about. Egwene rose to call her maids, but a knock at the door interrupted her. Curious, she walked across the thick rug, wearing only her nightgown, and opened the door enough to see Sylviana standing in the antechamber. Square-featured and dressed in red, she had her hair up in its typical bun, and her red keeper's stole over her shoulders. Mother, the woman said, her voice tense. I apologize for waking you. I wasn't asleep, Egwene said. What is it? What has happened? He's here, Mother. At the White Tower.
Who?
The Dragon Reborn. He's asking to see you. Well, this is a pot of fisherman's stew made only with the heads, Swan said, as she stalked through a hallway of the White Tower. How did he get through the city without anyone seeing him? High Captain Chubane winced. As well he should, Swan thought. The raven-haired man wore the uniform of the Tower Guard, a white tabard over his mail emblazoned with the flame of Tar Valon. He walked with a hand on his sword. There had been some talk that he might be replaced as High Captain now that Bryn was in Tar Valon, but Egwene had followed Swan's advice not to do so. Bryn didn't want to be High Captain, and he would be needed as a field general for the last battle. Bryn was out with his men. Finding quarters and food for 50,000 troops was proving to be near impossible. She'd sent him word, and could feel him getting closer. Stern block of wood though the man was, Swan felt that his stability would have been nice to have near her right now. The Dragon Reborn? Inside Tar Valon? It's not really that surprising he got so far, Swan, Saren said. The olive-skinned brown had been with Swan when they'd seen the captain racing by, pale-faced. Saren had white at her temples, some measure of age as an Aes Sedai, and had a scar on one cheek, the origin of which Swan hadn't been able to pry out of her. There are hundreds of refugees pouring into the city each day, Saren continued, and any man with half an inclination to fight is being sent for recruitment into the Tower Guard. It's no wonder nobody stopped Althor. Qubane nodded.
He was at the Sunset Gate before anyone questioned him. And then he just... Well, he just said he was the Dragon Reborn and that he wanted to see the Ammerlin. Didn't yell it out or anything. Said it calm as spring rain.
The hallways of the tower were busy, though most of the women didn't seem to know what they were to do, darting this way and that like fish in a net. Stop that, Swan thought. He's come into our seat of power. He's the one caught in the net.
What is his game, do you think? Saren asked.
Burn me if I know, Swan replied. He's bound to be mostly insane by now. Maybe he's frightened and has come to turn himself in.
I doubt that.
As do I, Swan said grudgingly.
During these last few days, she'd found, to her amazement, that she liked Saren. As Ammerlin, Swan hadn't had time for friendships. It had been too important to play the Ajahs off one another. She'd thought Saren obstinate and frustrating. Now that they weren't butting heads so often, she found those attributes appealing.
Maybe he heard that Elida was gone, Swan said, and thought that he would be safe here, with an old friend on the Ammerlin seat.
That doesn't match what I've read of the boy, Saren replied.
Reports call him mistrustful and erratic, with a demanding temper and an insistence on avoiding Aes Sedai.
That was what Swan had heard as well, though it had been 2 years since she'd seen the boy. In fact, the last time he'd stood before her, she'd been the Ammerlin, and he'd been a simple sheepherder. Most of what she knew of him since then had come through the Blue Aja's eyes and ears. It took a great deal of skill to separate speculation from truth, but most agreed about Althor. Temperamental, distrustful, arrogant.
Light burn, Elida, Swan thought. If not for her, we'd have had him safely in Aes Sedai care long ago.
They climbed down 3 spiraling ramps and entered another of the White Tower's white-walled hallways, moving toward the hall of the tower. If the Ammerlin was going to receive the Dragon Reborn, then she'd do it there. 2 twisting turns later, past mirrored stand lamps and stately tapestries, they entered one last hallway and froze. The floor tiles here glistened the color of blood. That wasn't right. The ones here should have been white and yellow. These glistened as if wet.
Qubane inhaled sharply, hand going to his sword hilt. Saren raised an eyebrow. Swan was tempted to barrel onward, but these places where the Dark One had touched the world could be dangerous. She might find herself sinking through the floor, or being attacked by the tapestries. The 2 Aes Sedai turned and walked the other way. Qubane lingered for a moment, then hurried after. It was easy to read the tension in his face. First the Shan Chen and now the Dragon Reborn himself come to assault the tower on his watch. As they passed through the hallways, they met other sisters flowing in the same direction. Most of them wore their shawls. One might have argued that was because of the news of the day, but the truth was that many still held to their distrust of other Ajahs. Another reason to curse Elida. Egwene had been working hard to reforge the tower, but one couldn't mend years' worth of broken nets in 1 month. They finally arrived at the hall of the tower. Sisters clustered in the wide hallway outside, dividing by Aja. Qubane hurried to speak with his guards at the door, and Saren entered the hall proper, where she could wait with the other sitters. Suan remained standing with the dozens outside. Things were changing. Egwene had a new keeper to replace Shiriam. The choice of Sylviana made a great deal of sense. The woman was known to have a level head for a red, and choosing her had helped forge the 2 halves of the tower back together. But Swan had harbored a small hope that she herself would be chosen. Now Egwene had so many demands on her time, and was becoming so capable on her own, that she was relying on Swan less and less. That was a good thing, but it was also infuriating. The familiar hallways,
the scent of freshly washed stone, the echoing of footsteps. When last she'd been in this place, she'd commanded it. No longer. She had no mind to climb her way into prominence again. The last battle was upon them. She didn't want to spend her time dealing with the squabbles of the Blue Aja as they reintegrated into the tower. She wanted to do what she'd set out to do all those years before with Moiraine, shepherd the dragon reborn to the last battle. Through the bond, she felt Bryn arrive before he spoke.
"Now there's a concerned face," he said,
piercing the hallway's dozens of hushed conversations as he walked up behind her. Swan turned to him. He was stately and remarkably calm, particularly for a man who had been betrayed by Morgay's Trakand, then sucked into Aes Sedai politics, then told he was going to be leading his troops on the front lines of the last battle. But that was Bryn, serene to a fault. He soothed her worries just by being there.
"You came faster than I'd assumed you'd be able to," she said.
"And I do not have a concerned face, Gareth Bryn. I'm Aes Sedai. My very nature is to be in control of myself and my surroundings."
"Yes," he said. "And yet, the more time I spend around the Aes Sedai, the more I wonder about that. Are they in control of their emotions? Or do those emotions just never change? If one is always concerned, one will always look the same."
She eyed him. "Fool man." He smiled, turning to look through the hallway full of Aes Sedai and warders.
"I was already returning to the tower with a report when your messenger found me. Thank you."
"You're welcome," she said gruffly.
"They're nervous," he said. "I don't think I've ever seen the Aes Sedai like this."
"Well, can you blame us?" she snapped.
He looked at her, then raised a hand to her shoulder. His strong, calloused fingers brushed her neck.
"What is wrong?"
She took a deep breath, glancing to the side as Egwene finally arrived, walking toward the hall in conversation with Sylviana. As usual, the somber Gawain Trakand lurked behind her like a distant shadow. Unacknowledged by Egwene, not bonded as her warder, yet not cast from the tower either. He'd spent the nights since the reunification guarding Egwene's doors, despite the fact that it angered her. As Egwene neared the entrance to the hall, sisters stepped back and made way, some reluctantly, others reverently. She'd brought the tower to its knees from the inside while being beaten every day and doused with so much fork root that she could barely light a candle with the power. So young, yet what was age to Aes Sedai?
"I always thought I would be the one in there," Swan said softly, just for Bryn. "That I would receive him, guide him. I was the one who was to be sitting in that chair."
Bryn's grip tightened.
"Swan,
Oh, don't be like that," she growled, looking at him. "I don't regret a thing."
He frowned.
"It's all for the best," Swan said,
though it twisted her insides in knots to admit it.
"For all her tyranny and foolishness, it is good that Elida removed me, because that is what led us to Egwene. She'll do better than I could have. It's hard to swallow. I did well as Amyrlin, but I couldn't do that. Lead by presence instead of force, uniting instead of dividing. And so I'm glad that Egwene is receiving him."
Bryn smiled, and he squeezed her shoulder fondly.
"What?" she asked. "I'm proud of you."
She rolled her eyes.
"Bah! That sentimentality of yours is going to drown me one of these days."
"You can't hide your goodness from me, Swan Sanche. I see your heart."
"You are such a buffoon."
"Regardless, you brought us here, Swan. Whatever heights that girl climbs to, she'll do it because you carved the steps for her."
"Yes, then handed the chisel to Elida."
Swan glanced toward Egwene, who stood inside the doorway into the hall. Young Amarlin glanced over the women gathered outside and nodded in greeting to Swan, maybe even a little in respect.
"She's what we need now," Bryn said. "But you're what we needed then." "You did well, Swan. She knows it, and the tower knows it."
That felt very good to hear.
"Well, did you see him when you came in?"
"Yes," Bryn said. "He's standing below, watched over by at least 100 warders and 26 sisters. 2 full circles. Undoubtedly he's shielded, but all 26 women seemed in a near panic. Nobody dares touch him or bind him."
"So long as he's shielded, it shouldn't matter. Did he look frightened, haughty, angry?"
"None of that."
"Well, what did he look like, then?"
"Honestly, Swan, he looked like an Aes Sedai."
Swan snapped her jaw closed. Was he taunting her again?
"No."
The general seemed serious. But what did he mean? Egwene entered the hall, and then a white-dressed novice went scuttling away, tailed by 2 of Chubain's soldiers. Egwene had sent for the dragon. Bryn remained with his hand on Swan's shoulder, standing just behind her in the hallway. Swan forced herself to be calm. Eventually, she saw motion at the end of the hallway. Around her, sisters began to glow as they embraced the source. Swan resisted that mark of insecurity. Soon a procession approached, warders walking in a square around a tall figure in a worn brown cloak, 26 Aes Sedai following behind. The figure inside glowed to her eyes. She had the talent of seeing Ta'veren, and Al'Thor was one of the most powerful of those to ever live. She forced herself to ignore the glow, looking at Al'Thor himself. It appeared that the boy had become a man. All hints of youthful softness were gone, replaced with hard lines. He'd lost the unconsciously slumped posture that many young men adapted, particularly the tall ones. Instead, he embraced his height as a man should, walking with command. Swan had seen false dragons during her time as Amarlin. Odd how much this man should look like them. She froze as he met her eyes. There was something indefinable about them, a weight, an age, as though the man behind them was seeing through the light of 1,000 lives compounded in one. His face did look like that of an Aes Sedai. Those eyes, at least, had agelessness. The dragon reborn raised his right hand. His left arm was folded behind his back and halted the procession.
"If you please,"
he said to the warders, stepping through them. The warders, shocked, let him pass. The dragon's soft voice made them step away. They should have known better. Al'Thor walked up to Swan, and she steeled herself. He was unarmed and shielded. He couldn't harm her. Still, Bryn stepped up to her side and lowered his hand to his sword.
"Peace, Gareth Bryn," Al'Thor said. "I will do no harm."
"You've let her bond you, I assume?"
"Curious. Elaine will be interested to hear of that. And Swan Sanche. You've changed since we last met."
"Change comes to all of us as the wheel turns."
"An Aes Sedai answer for certain."
Al'Thor smiled, a relaxed, soft smile. That surprised her.
"I wonder if I will ever grow accustomed to those. You once took an arrow for me. Did I thank you for that?"
"I didn't do it intentionally, as I recall," she said dryly.
"You have my thanks, nonetheless."
He turned toward the door to the hall of the tower.
"What kind of Amarlin is she?"
"Why ask me?"
He couldn't know of the closeness between Swan and Egwene.
"She's an incredible one," Swan said. "One of the greatest we've had, for all the fact that she's only held the seat a short time."
He smiled again.
"I should have expected nothing less."
Strange. But I feel that seeing her again will hurt, though that is one wound that has well and truly healed. I can still remember the pain of it, I suppose.
Light, but this man was making a muddle of her expectations. The White Tower was a place that should have unnerved any man who could channel, dragon reborn or not. Yet he didn't seem worried in the least. She opened her mouth, but was cut off as an Aes Sedai pushed through the group. Tiana? The woman pulled something out of her sleeve and proffered it to Rand. A small letter with a red seal. This is for you, she said. Her voice sounded tense, and her fingers trembled, though the tremble was so faint that most would have missed it. Swan had learned to look for signs of emotion in Aes Sedai, however. Althor raised an eyebrow, then reached over and took it.
What is it?
I promised to deliver it, Tiana said. I would have said no, but I never thought you'd actually come to... I mean...
She cut herself off, closing her mouth. Then she withdrew into the crowd. Althor slipped the note into his pocket without reading it.
Do your best to calm Egwene when I am done, he said to Swan.
Then he took a deep breath and strode forward, ignoring his guards. They hastened after him, the warders looking sheepish, but nobody dared touch him as he strode between the doors and into the hall of the tower. Hairs bristled on Egwene's arms as Rand came into the room, unaccompanied. Aes Sedai outside crowded around the doorway, trying to look as if they were not gawking. Sylviana glanced at Egwene. Should this meeting be sealed to the hall?
No, Egwene thought. They need to see me confront him. Light, but I don't feel ready for this.
There was no helping it. She steeled herself, repeating in her head the same words she'd been going over all morning. This was not Rand Althor, friend of her childhood, the man she'd assumed that she'd one day marry. Rand Althor she could be lenient with, but leniency here could bring about the end of the world. No. This man was the Dragon Reborn, the most dangerous man ever to draw breath. Tall, much more confident than she ever remembered him being. He wore simple clothing. He walked directly into the center of the hall, his warder guards remaining outside. He stopped in the center of the flame on the floor, surrounded by sitters in their seats.
Egwene, Rand said, voice echoing in the chamber.
He nodded to her, as if in respect.
You have done your part, I see. The Ammerlin's stole fits you well.
From what she had heard of Rand recently, she had not anticipated such calm in him. Perhaps it was the calm of the criminal who had finally given himself up. Was that how she thought of him? As a criminal? He had done acts that certainly seemed criminal. He had destroyed. He had conquered. When she'd last spent any length of time with Rand, they had traveled through the Aiel Waste. He had become a hard man during those months, and she saw that hardness in him still. But there was something else, something deeper.
What has happened to you? She found herself asking as she leaned forward on the Ammerlin seat.
I was broken, Rand said, hands behind his back. And then, remarkably, I was reforged. I think he almost had me, Egwene. It was Cad Swain who set me to fixing it, though she did so by accident. Still, I shall have to lift her exile, I suspect.
He spoke differently. There was a formality to his words that she didn't recognize. In another man, she would have assumed a cultured, educated background. But Rand didn't have that. Could tutors have trained him so quickly?
Why have you come before the Ammerlin seat? She asked. Have you come to make a petition? Or have you come to surrender yourself to the White Tower's guidance?
He studied her, hands still behind his back. Just behind him, 13 sisters quietly filed into the hall, the glow of Sidar around them as they maintained his shield. Rand didn't seem to care about that.
He studied the room, looking at the various sitters. His eyes lingered on the seats of Reds, two of which were empty. Pavara and Javindra hadn't yet returned from their unknown mission. Only Barasine, newly chosen to replace Duhara, was in attendance. To her credit, she met Rand's eyes evenly.
"I've hated you before," Rand said, turning back to Egwene. "I've felt a lot of emotions in recent months. It seems that from the very moment Moiraine came to the Two Rivers, I've been struggling to avoid Aes Sedai's strings of control. And yet, I allowed other strings, more dangerous strings, to wrap around me unseen. It occurs to me that I've been trying too hard. I worried that if I listened to you, you'd control me. It wasn't a desire for independence that drove me, but a fear of irrelevance. A fear that the acts I accomplished would be yours, and not my own."
He hesitated.
"I should have wished for such a convenient set of backs upon which to heap the blame for my crimes."
Egwene frowned. The Dragon Reborn had come to the White Tower to engage in idle philosophy? Perhaps he had gone mad. "Rand," Egwene said, softening her tone. "I'm going to have some sisters talk to you to decide if there is anything wrong with you. Please try to understand." Once they knew more about his state, they could decide what to do with him. The Dragon Reborn did need freedom to do as the prophecies said he would, but could they simply let him roam away, now that they had him? Rand smiled.
"Oh, I do understand, Egwene. And I am sorry to deny you, but I have too much to do. People starve because of me. Others live in terror of what I have done. A friend rides to his death without allies. There is so little time to do what I must."
"Rand," Egwene said, "we have to make sure." He nodded, as if in understanding.
"This is the part I regret. I did not wish to come into your center of power, which you have achieved so well, and defy you. But it cannot be helped. You must know what my plans are so that you can prepare. The last time I tried to seal the boar, I was forced to do it without the help of the women. That was part of what led to disaster, though they may have been wise to deny me their strength. Well, blame must be spread evenly, but I will not make the same mistakes a second time. I believe that Sidon and Sidar must both be used. I don't have the answers yet."
Egwene leaned forward, studying him. There didn't seem to be madness in his eyes. She knew those eyes. She knew Rand. "Light," she thought. "I'm wrong. I can't think of him only as the Dragon Reborn. I'm here for a reason. He's here for a reason. To me, he must be Rand, because Rand can be trusted, while the Dragon Reborn must be feared." "Which are you?" she whispered unconsciously. He heard.
"I am both, Egwene. I remember him. Luz Theron. I can see his entire life. Every desperate moment. I see it like a dream. But a clear dream. My own dream. It's part of me."
The words were those of a madman, but they were spoken evenly. She looked at him and remembered the youth that he had been. The earnest young man. Not solemn like Perrin, but not wild like Matt. Solid, straightforward. The type of man you could trust with anything, even the fate of the world.
"In 1 month's time," Rand said, "I'm going to travel to Sheol Ghul and break the last remaining seals on the Dark One's prison. I want your help."
Break the seals? She saw the image from her dream, Rand hacking at the ropes that bound the crystalline globe. "Rand, no," she said.
"I'm going to need you, all of you," he continued. "I hope to the light that this time you will give me your support. I want you to meet with me on the day before I go to Sheol Ghul, and then... well, then we will discuss my terms."
"Your terms?" Egwene demanded.
"You will see," he said, turning as if to leave.
"Randall Thor," she said, rising, "you will not turn your back on the Amarlin seat."
He froze, then turned back toward her.
"You can't break the seals," Egwene said. "That would risk letting the Dark One free."
"A risk we must take. Clear away the rubble. The bore must be opened fully again before it can be sealed."
"We must talk about this," she said. "Plan."
"That is why I came to you. To let you plan."
He seemed amused.
"Light."
She sat back down, angry. That bullheadedness of his was just like that of his father. "There are things we must speak of, Rand. Not just this, but other things. The sisters your men have bonded, not the least among them."
"We can speak of that when we next meet."
She frowned at him.
"And so here we come to it," Rand said.
He bowed to her, a shallow bow,
almost more a tip of the head. "Egwene Alvear, Watcher of the Seals, Flame of Tarvalin. May I have your permission to withdraw?"
He asked it so politely. She couldn't tell if he was mocking her or not. She met his eyes.
"Don't make me do anything I would regret," his expression seemed to say.
Could she really confine him here, after what she'd said to Elida about him needing to be free?
"I will not let you break the seals," she said.
"That is madness."
"Then meet with me at the place known as the Field of Merilor, just to the north. We will talk before I go to Shael Ghul. For now, I do not want to defy you, Egwene, but I must go."
Neither of them looked away. The others in the room seemed not to breathe. The chamber was still enough for Egwene to hear the faint breeze making the rose window groan in its lead. "Very well," Egwene said. "But this is not ended, Rand."
"There are no endings, Egwene," he replied,
then nodded to her and turned to walk from the hall. Light! He was missing his left hand. How had that happened? The sisters and warders reluctantly parted for him. Egwene raised a hand to her head, feeling dizzy. "Light," Sylviana said. "How could you think during that, Mother?"
"What?"
Egwene looked about the hall. Many of the sitters were slumping visibly in their seats. "Something gripped my heart," Barrasine said, raising a hand to her breast. "Squeezing it tight, I didn't dare speak."
"I tried to speak," Yukiri said. "My mouth wouldn't move."
"Taviran," Saren said. "But an effect as strong as that, I felt that it would crush me from the inside." "How did you resist it, Mother?" Sylviana asked. Egwene frowned. She hadn't felt that way, perhaps because she thought of him as Rand. "We need to discuss his words. The Hall of the Tower will reconvene in 1 hour's time for discussion." That conversation would be sealed to the hall, and someone follow to make sure he really leaves.
"Gareth Bryn is doing so," Chubane said from outside.
The sitters pulled themselves to their feet, shaken. Sylviana leaned down. "You're right, Mother. He can't be allowed to break the seals. But what are we to do, if you won't hold him captive?" "I doubt we could have held him," Egwene said. "There's something about him. I had the sense he could have broken that shield without a struggle." "Then how? How do we stop him?"
"We need allies," Egwene said. She took a deep breath. "He might be persuaded by people that he trusts.
Or he might be forced to change his mind if confronted by a large enough group united to stop him."
It was now more vital that she speak with Elaine and Nynaeve.